They live close by, Nick commented. They live in Seattle, Vince said. Right, forgot to adjust normal expectations. My mistake, Nick said. Well, if you're staying, then you can help me with the couch. Sure, Vince agreed. They went to each end of the couch and hefted it up. As they were inching around the room, a thought struck Vince. If everyone is coming, why aren't we doing this in the main common room?
Because Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport occasionally come through there, and I thought they might be a bit of a buzzkill on our day,
Nick said in a strained voice.
Hey, they aren't that bad. They've always been really nice to us, Vince said.
No denying that, but they're adults. Today we're blowing off legitimate work to piss the day away having fun. That is most definitely adolescent behavior, and I feel it will be more enjoyable without any judgmental gazes being cast our way from the kitchen.
I thought you said this was a valid stress management technique to improve test performances.
Oh, Vince, you can't believe everything you hear these days.
Now let's get to the video store before someone steals my idea and checks out the first season.
58.
I must say, it warms my heart as an educator to see such a robust turnout this morning,
Coach George announced as he paced along the line of skittish students.
How about you, Persephone?
Heart thoroughly warmed,
Coach Persephone answered.
Glad to hear it. I must say, I thought more of you would break by now. I was certain some would take this opportunity to drop out of the program rather than face today's exam. You've proven me wrong so far, but then the day is just beginning,
Coach George said. It was indeed just beginning. The students had been told to be lined up in the gym on exam day at 7 a.m. sharp. Most, if not all, had arrived early, rather than risk seeing what happened to those who strolled in minutes after the deadline. Many of them were still blinking the sleep out of their eyes, but they were in attendance and paying attention with the vigor that only fear can provide.
I'm sure many of you are wondering what today's test is. Well, as most of you know, this is the last chance any of you will have to show us which training course you'll be placed in next semester. As such, the only way we felt we could accurately measure your abilities was to pit you against one another,
Coach George continued. Some of the higher-ranked students perked up. If it was just going to be fighting, they were confident they would sail through this day easily.
Now, before anyone gets too excited, this won't be like your first day. I don't just want to see who can kick the shit out of each other. I want to see who can think on their feet, adapt to a changing environment. And yes, a little bit of shit-kicking will be in there, too. You see, my little freshman, today you enter the labyrinth.
The students glanced at one another with confused stares.
As you all know, we're located underneath the actual Lander campus. What most of you don't know, though, is that this is the top level of our subterranean stronghold. Farther down are other levels, whole environments designed to simulate real-life situations for training purposes. At the very bottom is a level we call the Labyrinth. Constantly moving, always shifting. It's a maze that would make you go crazy if you were abandoned there. Today, it will also be your battleground,
Coach George said. Coach Persephone stepped forward, holding two boxes. She began at one end of the line, fitting small bracelets on each student, and handing out what looked like tasers that had been dipped in paint.
My colleague is equipping you with the tools for your exam. Each of you will be given a bracelet and a weapon that is color-coded. The bracelets will turn yellow on those of you who can be injured by mundane means, while they will be red for those who are only susceptible to more extreme forms of damage. By the same token, if you have a power that allows you to deal out tremendous damage, you get a red weapon. And if you lack that skill, you get a yellow one. How the game works from here is simple. The weapons generate a specifically calibrated electrical pulse that reacts with the bracelets. So if someone strikes you, it will deactivate your bracelet. Once you're deactivated, you're out,
Coach George explained. Coach Persephone was making her way down the line quickly. Nearly half the students had already been outfitted. Those that had received their new equipment quickly took the time advantage to familiarize themselves with it. It didn't take long. There was no interface for the bracelets and only a single button on the tasers. Some of the smarter ones began to idly wonder just how the bracelet knew what color to turn once it was attached to them.
Now that should be simple enough to understand, but in the interests of realism, we added the color-coding system. Those with red bracelets can only be taken down with shocks from red weapons, while those with yellow bracelets are susceptible to both kinds. Additionally, since some of you folks change form in the course of a fight, the bracelets use a very complex sensor system to determine which category you fall into. That means if you're only extra durable when you're composed of steel, your bracelet will only be red when you fit that requirement.
There was a sound like a sword being pulled across an anvil, and suddenly, Stella was silver all over. The bracelet on her wrist flashed three times, then turned red.
You now know how the game is played. Next comes the question of winning. That is the easy part. You win by surviving and destroying. The three who stay in the game the longest and the three who deactivate the most other students all get the best scores. Everyone else gets evaluated on an individual performance basis. That's pretty much it. Use your powers as needed, but remember that unless your weapon connects with the other person, no amount of damage counts as a win for you.
This sounds fun, Nick whispered to Vince. Really? Are you out of your mind? We're about to be trapped in a maze with over 30 other people who are all much stronger than I am, most of whom are stronger than you as well. We're going to get the hell beaten out of us,
Nick whispered furiously.
At least we can all work together,
Vince pointed out.
To start you all off, we'll be using a random drop chamber so that you'll all be placed at different locations throughout the labyrinth. You'll be totally on your own and surrounded by potential enemies. Once you've been knocked out of the game, a guide function on your bracelets will activate and take you to the nearest exit. I suggest you don't dawdle because, while you might be out, the others will still be looking for blood,
Coach George continued.
We are so going to die, Vince
amended. Yep, Nick agreed.
That pretty much sums it up,
Coach George said.
I could take questions, but I'd rather see you find your answers in the field. When we call your name, follow Persephone to the drop chamber. Once you arrive, consider the game started. Remember, we'll be watching all the moves you make, so be smart in your strategies. Oh, and one more thing.
Coach George faced them, and a broad grin broke across his face. Many of the students involuntarily shuddered. More would have if they'd been perceptive.
Have fun down there.
59.
Pitch black. Of course it's pitch black. Why would I hope for anything different?
Alice grumbled as she was dropped into a room within the labyrinth. She groped around the walls slowly, finding that the room was blocked off from every direction except for a single exit in the form of an open archway. She floated up a few feet and checked the ceiling, too. Whatever opening had allowed her entrance had sealed up immediately afterward. On the plus side, though, the ceilings were high. Alice was estimating around 10 feet. The doorway didn't extend all the way to the ceiling, but if she only had to lower herself to pass through doors, that still might work out to be a pretty good deal. Yellow weapon and yellow bracelet. Yeah, I'll be out of here in time to get breakfast, she said, talking to herself in an effort to keep focused. It was disorienting to be in this much darkness. Not even her bracelet gave off any light, which, given that it had a glow system incorporated, was odd. Still, she should probably be thankful that it wasn't exuding light. It would have stood out like a beacon in this environment. At least now she could hug the ceiling and have a fighting chance of lasting. Mary wasn't all that put out by the darkness. As soon as she landed, she opened her mind, stretching her perception until she could hear the thoughts of nearly every other student in the labyrinth with her. After a few moments of careful hunting, she located the thoughts of the person she was looking for and began making her way to him. It was slow going without any source of light, but Mary could feel his direction. Plus, she was well aware of any others that were approaching, so she steered clear of them. It wasn't that Mary didn't plan on fighting, it merely wasn't beneficial for her yet. She moved quickly and carefully through the corridors, feeling the occasional student grow close to her, and listening to the grinding shifts as new doors opened while others closed. She was still listening to everyone's thoughts, and was accumulating some very useful facts about how the labyrinth functioned. However, at no point did she deviate from her plan or alter the goal of her path. At long last, she reached a closed door. She felt around the side and located the switch. As the door slid open, she was temporarily blinded by the deluge of light assaulting her eyes. After a few seconds to adjust and a myriad of blinks, she was finally able to see again.
"Hey there, stranger," she said,
greeting the room's other inhabitant.
"Need a hand?"
Roy was on a one-man rampage. So far, he'd taken down a stretchy guy and some weird chick with dolls. Now he was hot on the trail of someone else, though whom was anyone's guess in the damn darkness. He'd been lucky and found a lighted room to fight the first two in, but after 20 minutes of waiting, he'd given it up and started roaming the corridors, looking for more prey. Roy could hear the footsteps ahead of him, and didn't bother to disguise his own. If whoever was in front of him was lucky enough to have a red taser, they still wouldn't be able to pinpoint his location fast enough to stop him. Instead, he barreled forward, foregoing all manner of stealth in favor of a full-on charge. He heard the steps in front of him quicken as well, and the chase was on. Roy's senses were above a normal human's range, but they were far from the most powerful thing about him. Still, it was enough to keep track of the person running away from him. They were crafty, moving around corners and doubling back down corridors, but they weren't good enough to beat Roy. As far as Roy was concerned, no one held that distinct honor. With each turn, he was drawing closer and closer, and as he rounded one last corner, he was positive he was almost right on top of his prey. As Roy swung around the corner, a blast hit him square in the chest, slamming him back against the wall. His head swam, and he saw stars as he tried to pull himself back up. His efforts were interrupted by a small jolt to his neck. It wasn't enough to incapacitate or even annoy him. It was only enough to cause his bracelet to glow white in the darkness and emit a small, sad beep.
"And another one bites the dust," said a cheery female voice at his side.
"You ambushed me," Roy said accusingly.
"Don't be silly. I trapped you. That's way more effort than a simple ambush. Thanks for playing, though."
A small, green arrow appeared on the bracelet, pointing to the left. As Roy stood and angled himself in that direction, the arrow moved as well, turning until it was facing forward.
"What's your name?"
Roy asked.
"Amber," said the voice in the darkness.
"Amber,"
Roy said, tasting the name and memorizing its flavor.
"That was a hell of a shot.
You and I will have to spar one day when this is all over."
"Sounds fun. You bring the muscles, I'll bring the concussions," Amber said.
Vince turned another corner and entered into a new room. It was as dark as the others, but this one had the added adornment of muffled breathing in the corner. Vince's hand tightened around his weapon. He had a red taser, so theoretically he could take down anyone here, but if it was someone with real combat skill, he'd be at a disadvantage if he gave his location away. Never in his life did Vince suspect he would be so thankful to all the times he and his father had snuck aboard a train at night or crept through town silently. Those experiences had taught him to shroud the sounds of his movements, and right now that was likely the only thing keeping the other person in the room from leaping. Vince readied himself to take the offensive. He'd prepared an attack plan as soon as he'd arrived in this endless black environment. Before he could strike, though, the other person took him completely by surprise.
"Vince?"
The voice was very familiar. It only took Vince a moment to realize who he'd been on the brink of battling.
"Alex? Is that you?" Vince asked.
"Yeah, it's me,"
Alex confirmed.
"How did you know who I was?"
"Man, you guys always forget my power lets me sense others' minds. We've hung out enough to where yours is familiar,"
Alex explained.
"That's cool,"
Vince said, only barely stopping himself from using the word creepy instead.
"Comes in handy,"
Alex replied.
"So, how are things?"
It dawned on Vince that neither of them were sure how to proceed from here. Yes, they had run into a friend, but this was still their test. They both needed to take down others while simultaneously surviving. Still, Vince didn't know if he had it in him to just coldly attack someone he considered a friend.
"Hey, Alex," Vince said.
"In all of Coach George's ranting, did he ever say we couldn't work together? I mean, if you and I wanted to team up with someone we trusted on the hopes of increasing our score, I don't think that violates any of the test rules."
"That's true. He said survive and destroy. He never got specific about how we do it,"
Alex agreed. "I like that solution a lot better than us duking it out in the dark," Vince said.
"You and me both. So we work together until we're the only two left?"
"I think that would be a beautiful problem to encounter," Vince said cheerfully. "Let's get moving." Nick was the only one of the five to be dropped into a room that was lit when he arrived. Rather than leaving his cocoon of light, though, he sat down in the center of the room and began concentrating. Nick had known his plan the minute Coach George had explained the game to them. Nick was going to do nothing. Well, nothing physically, anyway. Nick's strategy was a focused, steady stream of luck that he hoped would keep him hidden. People were wandering around a maze with no sense of direction or idea where they were going. They were depending almost entirely on luck to guide them. And since Nick happened to hold some sway in that department, it should be guiding them anywhere else but to him. Admittedly, it wasn't the most ambitious of plans, but given the circumstances, it would ideally ensure that he lasted into the final three survivors. The top headhunting positions were all still open, though Nick was under no disillusions that he'd ever had a shot at claiming one of those. Instead, He put his efforts and power into making sure he stayed all alone in his little room for as long as possible. It seemed to be working for a while, but then, all at once, the door in front of Nick slid open. It was difficult to see outside. Apparently, it was pitch black in the next room over. Nick made no movement to get up from his seat. If someone had found him, then they had found him. And if it was just the labyrinth being weird, then he wasn't going to interrupt his concentration. A few seconds after the door opened, though, a familiar voice came wafting in from the darkness.
"Hey there, stranger. Need a hand?"
60.
"Not even a little bit," Nick replied. "Thanks for the offer, though. Try not to give away my position on your way out of here."
"Really? Just kicking me out? Where's that legendary Nick wit and chatty nature?"
Mary asked.
"Seen any good movies lately? How's the folks? Cold enough for you these days? Get the hell out of here."
"Now that wasn't so hard,"
Mary said, walking fully into the room. The door swooshed shut automatically as she left its proximity.
"Yet you're still coming in. For a telepath, you sure can't take a hint."
Nick sighed, rising to his feet.
"Or maybe you're thinking of zapping me and upping your stats."
"Or, and this is just a crazy idea, I want us to help each other so we can do better in this trial,"
Mary said.
"Who needs help here? I had a perfectly good plan, and you're the number one rank on the girls' side. Pretty sure we'll be just fine on our own," Nick said.
"You know, Nick, the word us can mean more than just the two people currently standing in a room together,"
Mary pointed out.
"Let me get this straight. You want me to abandon my safe little hidey hole so that I can go with you, charging through a labyrinth, all in the name of helping our dorm mates?" Nick asked.
"Everyone except Roy. He's already out of the game,"
Mary confirmed.
"Oh, well, that changes everything," Nick said, throwing his hands up dramatically. "They'll be fine. I mean, they'll lose, and quickly, but they'll be fine in the long run."
"Are you sure about that? You know this test is going to determine who moves on to next semester. What if they do so badly they get cut from the program?"
Mary asked.
"Then we buy them a conciliatory fruit basket and move on with our lives," Nick said.
"You can act as blasé as you want about this, Nick, but don't forget, I peek inside your head more than occasionally. You and I both know that you've put in a ton of time working this group, creating just the right persona, and positioning yourself precisely where you want to be in the group dynamic."
"And your point here is?" Nick asked.
"You aren't the kind of guy who will let all that hard work go down the drain if it's avoidable. The best way to make sure your efforts bear fruit is to keep the group the way it is. And that means everyone advancing to next semester,"
Mary explained.
"See, this is why I hate telepaths,"
Nick all but swore.
"Fine. Lead on, oh champion of the misfit supers."
"I think I'll do just that,"
Mary said with a smile, opening the door once more and stepping out into the unknown. Alice's strategy was panning out well so far. She'd heard more than a couple fellow students padding beneath her, but thus far none of them had discerned the floating blonde over their heads. Once or twice she'd briefly entertained the idea of dropping on top of them in surprise and trying to shock them out of the game. Common sense and awareness that her weapon was only effective on a select few had ultimately prevailed and helped her adhere to her hiding strategy. As time ticked away, Alice noticed fewer and fewer students passing beneath her. Of course, some were being eliminated, but it seemed to be happening with alarming frequency. It began to occur to her that she might just have a shot at being one of the last people standing, as long as she kept herself hidden, of course. It was this need that kept her moving, carefully crossing doorways only when she was positive there was no one else waiting on the other side. She could have stayed still in one room, and in fact tried to at one point, but standing alone, in utter darkness and silence, is far more terrifying than moving through it with a purpose. Alice tried to keep her method of movement simple. She alternated left and right turns, not really caring about tracking her own movements, only wanting to avoid backtracking if possible. She also noticed occasionally that when she was in a room, the door she entered through would close, and two others would open. If she'd been hoping to get a sense of where she was, this might have been discouraging. As it was, being lost suited her just fine. As she navigated through the catacombs of darkness, she ultimately came upon a room with something unique in it, a door that required being physically opened. If there had been another way out of the room, she likely would have taken it, but the curiosity was her only option for pressing forward, so Alice groped around until her hand struck a small switch. The first thing that struck Alice was the overwhelming brightness of the light that assaulted her eyes as the door slid open. The second was the ridiculous amount of wind that smashed against her. For a few brief and very confusing seconds, Alice truly believed she had somehow opened up a door leading into a hurricane. Then her eyes adjusted, and things made both more and less sense. Dashing around the room in combat was Sasha, recognizable only when she slowed down enough to change direction or when she clashed with her enemy. The enemy Sasha was fighting was also Sasha. The duo were duking it out, fighting at insane speeds that were generating the winds Alice had felt. Alice blinked her eyes to make sure she was seeing things correctly, then very seriously considered flipping that switch again to see if it would make the door close. Unfortunately, before her thoughts could solidify into action, the pair of Sashas noticed her and shouted in unison.
"Alice, give me a hand with this imposter!"
At first, Vince was convinced he was hallucinating, but then Alex's question confirmed what he was seeing.
"Is someone using an orange flashlight?"
Both of them had noticed an orange beam glowing lightly from a few rooms down. It was sweeping erratically, as if wielded by someone trying desperately to make sense of their surroundings.
"Looks that way," Vince whispered.
"So, do we run away?"
Alex asked. Vince shook his head, then realized Alex could no more see him than vice versa.
"No," Vince said. "There are other people who are too good at moving with stealth for us to have a chance at being the last two standing. Our best chance is to start taking down others when we can find them."
"Best defense is a good offense,"
Alex echoed.
"More or less. Though to be honest, I'd feel better if I had a red bracelet to go with my red weapon. Equal out that offense and defense,"
Vince whispered back.
"Hey, at least you have one red item. I'm yellow on both accounts,"
Alex complained.
"That doesn't seem right. I mean, I saw them give Mary a red weapon,"
Vince said.
"Hey, Vince, I think we're kind of stalling here,"
Alex pointed out.
"Oh, yeah, you're right. We should get moving,"
Vince said.
"You should also realize that in total silence, the sound of a whisper carries far,"
said a familiar voice from one room over. While Vince and Alex had been talking, the orange light had gone out, and its owner had made his way much closer to the duo. He now stepped through the doorway and reignited his light source, which turned out to be his left hand.
"Thomas," Vince said happily.
I thought that shade of orange looked familiar. I didn't know you could use your energy like a light.
I can do a lot of things with it,
Thomas replied. Man, Nick must have put a whammy of good luck on me before we came down, because I keep running into friends, Vince said, relief evident in his voice. He hadn't been looking forward to trying to take down another student, no matter how necessary it was.
I don't know that I would go that far, Thomas said,
and without another word, his right hand burst into orange light as well. Instead of a dim glow, this light arced out and split into two beams, one each slamming into Vince and Alex and wrapping around their torsos. Their arms were pinned to their sides immediately, and as soon as they were encased, they felt themselves lift several feet in the air.
It's nothing personal, Thomas said, as he used his left hand to pluck out his own red weapon.
The flashlight-like glow vanished, but the pulsating energy emitting from his right hand kept the room amply lit.
It's as you said. Some of us are lacking the skills to succeed at the stealth portion of this exam. That only leaves bringing down other students.
A little warning might have been appreciated, Vince said, struggling to push against the orange energy enveloping him.
Appreciated and ill-advised, Thomas replied. You are both strong opponents. Without surprise, I doubt I could have taken you both. Such tactics would never be acceptable in a man-to-man fight. However, the environment here seems to suggest it is well within the rules, if not expected.
Surprising us was the right idea, Alex said,
an odd smile dancing on his face in the orange light.
Explaining why you did it and giving us time was wrong.
My apologies if I gave you hope, but I did so because my abilities have already been tested against telepaths. Your kind deal in moving only solid matter with your minds, and energy is far less dense than that,
Thomas said.
I'm only going to say this one more time, Alex said, taking in a deep breath.
A vein in his forehead bulged, and sweat materialized on his forehead.
I am not a fucking telepath!
61. Vince had to admit he didn't think Alex was going to be able to do anything to Thomas's energy. Right up until Alex yelled, and the circle binding him was forced apart. Without pause, Alex dropped to the ground, made a quick motion with his hand, and flung Thomas across the room. Now, in the time it took Alex to land and attack, Thomas could have easily struck again or made some move to defend himself. The trouble was that while Vince was slightly surprised by Alex's ability to push energy away, Thomas was absolutely flabbergasted. He stood in dumb shock as Alex's force gripped him and sent him crashing into the wall. When he struck, his concentration faltered, and the energy binding Vince dissipated.
That was pretty cool, Vince said, as he landed carefully on the hard stone below. Thanks, Alex said. Sorry about the yelling. It just gets frustrating sometimes.
Vince made a very precise mental note to never question the origins of Alex's power to his face.
I hope you didn't hurt him too badly.
I am fine,
Thomas answered, rising to his feet.
I'd like to know what trick you used, though. You should not be able to stop energy. How did you do it?
Alex shrugged.
Nothing is beyond the Force.
Very well, then, Thomas replied. It seems I will have to fight you both head to head. I had hoped to avoid that, but if it must be, then it must be.
He lit up again, this time both hands glowing bright orange. Without warning, five beams from each hand lanced out directly at Vince and Alex. They were ready this time, though. Vince rolled to the side, and Alex held up a hand, knocking the beams away. As Vince pulled himself back up,
He pinned his attention on Thomas, readying himself for the next volley. He noticed that Thomas's hand still showed 10 beams extended. Vince put it all together just in time, leaping forward and narrowly missing the 5 that slammed down in the spot where he had been. "What the hell?" Vince cried out, ducking to the side as the 5 orange strands snaked out, each one trying to snare him.
"I told you, my energy moves like an appendage, taking whatever shape I require,"
Thomas explained from the spot near the wall.
"All of them move independently, and if one of them touches you, then you are as good as restrained."
Vince snuck a glance at Alex, only to see his friend working double time to try and deflect the beams from all angles. While Vince's 5 were staying fairly closely knit, the ones battling Alex were spread out, forcing him to block them at random intervals from every direction. At the rate things were going, Vince and Alex would lose, and soon. All it took was one beam getting through to snare them once more, and even if Alex could get himself free, one had to wonder how many times that trick would work. As for Vince, if he was caught, that was probably the end of things. In a moment of desperation, a plan formed in Vince's head. It was stupid, and more than likely wouldn't work at all. Still, it was a way to lose proactively, and Vince preferred that to just jumping around, waiting to be picked off.
"Alex!" Vince called. "I need you to buy me 30 seconds. Can you do that?"
"No idea," Alex replied. "Guess we'll find out."
With that, Alex stepped forward and brought to bear all that he had. Thomas's orange beams were slammed backward against the sheer might of Alex's will. Try as he might to move them forward, Thomas kept striking an invisible wall, one that didn't seem to be yielding one bit. As soon as the beams were restrained, Vince stopped running and bent over. His breathing intensified, indicating he was trying to get his breath back before he tried whatever was to come next. He placed his hands on top of his pockets and stared at the ground. He was about to do something crazy. He should be scared. He should be wary. He should be worried. Instead, he was exhilarated. Before either Sasha could say another word, Alice bounded through the door and flew up to the ceiling. It was higher in this room, at least 15 feet down to the floor, and Alice hugged it as closely as she could, desperate for every inch she could put between herself and the 2 women beneath her.
"Someone want to explain what the hell?" Alice called down.
"He's a mimic!" Sasha yelled.
"No, he is,"
the other Sasha countered.
"He snuck up on me and grabbed my hand."
"Okay, so we're all agreeing that one of you is a mimic at least, right?"
Alice asked.
"Yes!"
This was yelled in unison by both Sashas.
"He can copy your appearance and powers if he touches you,"
one of the Sashas elaborated.
"But it isn't as strong as the original,"
the other one chimed in.
"Well, sounds like a good show for me then,"
Alice said, crossing her arms.
"Huh?"
Technically, this wasn't done in unison, nor was the wording exactly the same, but there are certain gut-generated noises that have a universal meaning, regardless of the particular syllables used to create them.
"The real Sasha is faster, so she'll win,"
Alice said simply.
"Seems like this will sort itself out."
"It isn't that simple,"
Sasha informed her.
"I'm not used to fighting someone who can keep up with me."
"Yeah,"
Sasha agreed.
"He's used to dealing with all kinds of powers, so even if I'm a little faster, he's still got enough combat experience to give me hell."
"Then what do you want me to do? In case you didn't notice, I'm not exactly king of the combat hill myself,"
Alice retorted.
"Just come lend a hand," Sasha said. "With 2 of us, it'll be much harder for him,"
Sasha pointed out. Alice paused and gave it some thought, then pulled out her own yellow weapon.
"Okay, Sasha's. One question before I decide who to help. Your boyfriend is Vince, so you've spent a lot of time with us in Melbrook throughout the semester. So then, who is Mary's best friend?
You,
said one of the Sashas.
Herschel,
said the other.
Bingo,
Alice said, dropping down next to the girl who had answered Herschel and putting her weapon at the ready.
Let's get this faker,
she said, smiling at the Sasha next to her and glaring at the one across from them.
You got it. Ow!
The Sasha responding was the one next to her. Coincidentally, it was also the one Alice had slammed her weapon into the neck of as soon as she had looked across at her identical counterpart. The bracelet on her wrist flashed yellow, then turned clear, as a small green arrow appeared in one spot.
Damn it,
Sasha swore, and as Alice watched in fascination, her features seemed to melt together, shifting and squirming, until Alice found herself staring at a boy, shorter than she, with light hair buzzed close to the head.
I'm impressed. I didn't think you were planning the double cross. See you girls back up top.
With that, he made his way to the exit, indicated by the arrow, and stepped out of the room.
That was amazing!
Sasha squealed. She walked over to Alice and gave her a hug.
How did you know he was the fake one just by that?
I didn't, Alice replied.
You... Wait, what?
Before the words were fully formed, Sasha felt Alice's weapon dig into her side, sending its charge into her and eliminating her from the test.
I said I didn't know. I just asked a generic question you'd both answer. The one I picked to surprise was random,
Alice explained.
But you just eliminated the real me, too,
Sasha said in a hurt voice, still holding on to Alice in their now very awkward hug.
Yes, I did. And I'd feel a lot worse about it if I hadn't noticed you adjust your grip on your weapon before coming in for this hug,
Alice replied.
Touché, my fellow crafty lady,
Sasha said, releasing the hug and checking her bracelet.
You're more dangerous than you look. What would you have done if you'd taken out the real me first, though?
Been eliminated, but done so with at least one win under my belt, Alice answered.
Not a bad plan. Good luck with the rest of the test. The longer you're in here, the tougher the remaining opponents will be,
Sasha informed her. Alice nodded her understanding, then made a dash to get back into the relative safety offered by darkness. Also, she made a note not to go into any more of these damn lit rooms.
Fudge,
Mary said, as she and Nick rounded a corner.
What?
He asked.
Someone hurt us. Someone tough. Hurry and follow me quickly. There's a lit room nearby, and we have to get there,
Mary said, quickening her speed to a run.
Why is it so important we get there?
Because I have no idea how to fight this guy in the dark,
Mary replied.
Do you know how to do it in the light?
Not really,
she answered.
Peachy,
Nick sighed, turning up the speed and following his diminutive guide as fast as he could. 62. The door opened, showing only darkness outside of the well-lit room Nick and Mary had entered only moments before. There was a slight whooshing sound, and then another student was standing in front of them, yellow weapon ready at hand. Small wisps of smoke curled in the air for less than a second around the area in which he had appeared. The boy himself wasn't too impressive. Short in stature and excessively lean. He had a wide grin on his face, though, one that left Nick feeling disconcerted, given that he and Mary had the advantage in numbers.
"Who's this guy?" Nick asked, plucking out his own weapon and standing ready.
"His name is Gilbert, and he's a teleporter,"
Mary informed him,
her red weapon already drawn. He also has perfectly good hearing and doesn't necessarily like being talked about as though he weren't in the room, Gilbert added. Also, come on, there's only like 40 of us left. You couldn't be bothered to learn everyone's name?
I've got a shitty memory, so sue me, Nick quipped.
Better idea, Gilbert replied, vanishing from his spot and reappearing behind Nick, lunging forward with his weapon. Nick slid to the side as soon as he saw Gilbert disappear, though, so Gilbert's sneak attack cleaved nothing but air. Before Nick could try a thrust of his own, Gilbert was standing on the other side of the room.
I see how this guy could be problematic, Nick admitted, reorienting himself to face his opponent's new position.
Exactly, Mary agreed.
Any time now, Alex announced, sweat dripping off his forehead in intense concentration. Vince took one last deep breath and stood. Everything had worked so far. That in itself was a victory. Now came the hardest part. Vince put his hand into his left pocket and produced his weapon, the red coloring tinted a sickly shade from Thomas's orange light. Vince felt a rush of adrenaline crash over him, elation not far on its heels. Do or die time. Vince couldn't stop the grin that crept into the corners of his mouth.
Clear me a path! Vince yelled, charging forward without waiting for confirmation.
If Alex could still do it, then he would. If not, then this wasn't going to work anyway. As Vince pumped his legs, a part of his mind realized that this was only his second real fight since coming to Lander, and once again, he was betting heavily on a suicidal charge right at his opponent. He really needed to learn another way to problem solve. As his heart raced and his feet slapped the concrete floor, Vince noticed he was in Thomas's range. He hadn't been snagged yet, though, so that meant Alex was still keeping the energy at bay. There were still several more feet to cover, and as Vince drew closer, he realized Thomas's tendrils were bonding together, striking back with more power. Each attempt seemed to get closer to landing on Vince's fast-moving form. It was going to be a photo finish. In the end, Vince very nearly pulled it off. His finger was on the button, and his arm almost completely extended when he felt his legs go out from under him. A few inches more and he would have driven his weapon into Thomas's shoulder. That was simply not the case, though, as Vince was once more jerked into the air, his arms pinned to his torso. Without pause, Thomas lanced a shot of energy over at Alex, easily snaring and capturing him once more. From the way Alex was panting wearily, Vince had a sinking suspicion that he wouldn't be able to break free this time.
"Well now," Thomas said, a little short of breath himself. "That was an impressive move. Marshal all your forces into one all-out attack. Risky, but very nearly effective."
"Thanks," Vince said, resisting the temptation to kick his legs futilely. "You were wearing us down the other way, so I figured, why not give it a shot?"
"If your partner had been a hair stronger, or if you had been just a bit faster. Despite all our power, it often seems these fights come down to a very narrow margin of victory," Thomas said, as he lowered Vince to only a few inches off the ground.
At the same time, an orange tendril emerged and nimbly plucked an object from Thomas's back pocket. It was his own yellow weapon, and the tendril was soon shaped into a hand holding the device, a finger carefully placed on the button to activate it. "That really is neat how you can do that," Vince said, watching the show.
"Thank you. I've found it useful.
Hands, beams, shields, even needles. My energy takes any form I can think of, and stays just as powerful regardless, Thomas said.
Very adaptive, Vince complimented.
Much appreciated. I am sorry yours was so limiting in this environment, Thomas said graciously.
He maneuvered the weapon upward. There was only a foot or so between himself and Vince, but he was still keeping that buffer just in case. This silver-haired boy had shown himself occasionally unpredictable.
I don't know about that, Vince said. I mean, it's limiting in some senses, but with a little creative risk-taking, it can actually be pretty useful.
A "how so" died on Thomas's tongue, the victim of a sudden case of shock in multiple senses. Before the innocent words had a chance to be born and greet the world, Vince's eyes crackled with red lightning, which leapt out and struck Thomas in the chest. The voltage shattered his concentration, as well as temporarily disabling his motor skills. It also hurt like hell. As Thomas felt the twitching in his muscles subside, and his vision slowly come back into focus, he noticed his bracelet was now glowing clear with a green arrow. The "how so" was gone, off to wherever unspoken words go when they are truly forgotten. A new combination was being assembled, though, and this phrase burst into the world unhindered by any outside influences.
What in the hell was that?
Vince was standing over him, having been freed when Thomas's concentration was shattered. He looked vaguely different, and Thomas realized it was because they were being lit only by the meager light from his now clear bracelet. A clattering sound reached Thomas's ears, and after bathing the area once more in orange light, he could see that Vince had tossed him his weapon.
"Try it out," Vince said. "I think you'll understand then."
Obediently, Thomas picked up the red device and pressed its button. There was nothing. No arc of light from one metal point to the other, no soft hum of electricity, no difference of any kind.
"You drained it,"
Thomas mumbled, his tongue still shaking off the after effects of voltage overload.
"Shouldn't that have set off your own bracelet?"
"I thought it might," Vince admitted. "That's why I didn't do it when I first got down here. Once you were hammering away at us, though, it was obvious we were going to lose eventually. So I decided to give it a whirl."
"You weren't catching your breath for the charge,"
Thomas said, more to himself than to Vince as understanding set in. "I was drinking the whole battery down to empty. It was a big risk, because they told us the electricity was calibrated to react specifically with the bracelets. I wasn't sure if my draining it would alter it anyway, so even when I took the shot, I didn't know if it would work," Vince explained.
"And if it didn't, then you'd be stuck down here with no way to eliminate other students,"
Alex concluded, wobbling his way over and joining them.
"Pretty much," Vince said. "So I just wanted you to know, the only way I was able to beat you was by taking several gambles that very easily could have totally knocked me out of commission."
"I appreciate the attempts to spare my ego,"
Thomas said, slowly rising to his feet.
"They are unnecessary, though. I lost in fair battle to strong opponents. I feel no shame in this fight."
"No hard feelings?" Vince asked, extending his hand.
"It is the nature of the exam,"
Thomas said, accepting and shaking back.
"You might want to get moving, though. This room has been visibly lit up for some time now. Other students are bound to have noticed."
"Crap," Vince said, realization slowly dawning on his face.
"Good call. Alex, you okay to move?"
"Winded," Alex admitted. "I should be fine after a few minutes of rest, though."
"Good luck," Thomas told them. Do well today. I would not want the men who were able to defeat me to be taken down easily.
Of course, Vince said, trying to hide the first trembles in his hands as the adrenaline wore off. He and Alex had pushed themselves to their limits to take down one other competent student. Vince wondered how much more they had left in them to deal with the next challenge. 63. The last 5 minutes had unveiled some unfortunate truths. The first was that Gilbert could teleport faster than Mary was able to read his mind and anticipate the movement. The second was that while she could grab him, he could easily teleport out of her telekinetic grip. The last was that Gilbert clearly had some gymnastics experience.
"Were your parents monkeys or something?" Nick yelled as he ducked away from one of Gilbert's attacks.
Without missing a beat, Gilbert vanished, reappearing at the other end of the room, doing a flip off the wall and landing perfectly.
"My parents put me in tumbling at an early age. Turns out short guys have an advantage in that field," Gilbert explained.
"Good for you," Nick grumbled, pulling himself to his feet, but keeping his eyes trained on Gilbert.
"I don't suppose you've thought of a plan yet," he said to Mary out of the side of his mouth.
"Right now, all I'm hoping for is that all that jumping around wears him down faster than dodging wins us," she replied.
Her breath was a little short, and Nick had noticed her movements were slowing ever so slightly. Gilbert, on the other hand, was getting faster, if anything. He was clearly in better shape than they were. Not to mention, he was able to conserve energy by using only the most necessary movements. Running out the clock clearly wasn't going to work.
"Incoming," Nick announced as Gilbert disappeared.
Trusting his instincts, Nick tumbled to the side, popping up with his weapon at the ready. This time, Gilbert had gone for Mary, though. Fortunately, she had ducked down in time and smacked him away with a mental punch. He flew back, vanishing from sight, then reappearing for a few wall rebounds before coming to rest delicately on his nimble feet. They were going to lose soon, Nick realized. His own body was beginning to show the first symptoms of wear. From this point, it was a steady downhill slide. Gilbert had them in endurance and mobility, so the only chance left was strategy. Unlike Vince, though, Nick wasn't a fan of all-or-nothing tactics.
"Mary,"
Nick thought forcefully. He needed to talk to her, but giving Gilbert any more information than he had was too risky. Hopefully, the girl was still listening to minds around her and would pick up his call. Hope panned out as Mary jerked her head in Nick's direction and angled her head curiously. Good. She was listening.
"Mary, I need your help to beat this guy. Take both of our weapons with your mind and start attacking with them using the patterns I'll be thinking of. Dodge as necessary, but make sure to follow my patterns perfectly."
Mary gave a small, almost imperceptible nod, and Nick released his weapon. It dropped by maybe 3 inches before jerking to a stop and zipping away into the air. Nick barely had time to think of the first pattern before Gilbert was on them again. They managed to avoid him, but neither weapon struck during his brief tenure in their vicinity. This time, when he reappeared across the room, though, there was no temporary ceasefire. Nick directed Mary to press the attack, making minor alterations on the pattern's trajectories, but continuing without pause. Gilbert had to teleport away, and Nick felt a thin smile appear on his face. They were finally making him reactive instead of proactive, and that was exactly where Nick needed him to be. It wasn't a perfect system. Gilbert began attacking more frequently, avoiding their weapons and coming at them with a single jump. He stayed longer, too, until Mary knocked him back or the weapons flew over. With each disappearance, Nick saw a little bit more. Finally, just when he was growing sincerely worried about his own stamina, Nick found the opportunity he had been waiting for. Nick concentrated on a new pattern for Mary to attack with, and simultaneously began edging away from her.